Hello and welcome to another episode of SoccerCast Chicago. It has been a couple weeks. Things have been a little busy around here, but it's great to be back. Later in the episode, I'm going to be talking to Chicago Red Stars defender Zoe Morse about her environmentalism and conservation work, so please stay tuned for that. But first, we are looking ahead to the Red Stars matchup this weekend at home against Racing Louisville FC, and to do that, I'm going to be joined now by Michael Shaw, who recently started up Fleur-de-Lis FC, a website and accompanying Twitter account focused on all things racing. Michael, thanks so much for taking the time to come on SoccerCast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So first of all, and this is still a very new project, we were talking before we started recording the podcast. You mentioned that both your website and the Twitter account are about a month old now. What was kind of the inspiration for you to start up this project?
Well, there was a couple of main reasons. The primary reason in my mind was that the city of Louisville had not had a top-tier professional franchise in my lifetime, basically. The last top-tier professional franchise they had was in the ABA. It was the Kentucky Colonels, which ceased existence in, 1976, the year after I was born. So I guess I was alive, but no recollection of that. And if you know anything about Louisville, it's basically a big college sports town, not much on the professional sports. So it was trying to fill a gap in what I perceived as not necessarily a lack of coverage, but maybe a nice niche where, you know, you could get a fan website going. Probably wasn't a whole lot of coverage from purely a fan's perspective. So that was kind of the impetus behind it, was to kind of fill a gap. But also, I think every top tier professional franchise in the country deserves a fan website. So instead of telling somebody to create it, I created it myself, and I've had a blast doing it so far.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And yeah, congratulations on getting that up off the ground. Looking at, this weekend's matchup, Red Stars against Racing Louisville, thinking about Racing Louisville at all, but particularly from a soccer perspective, I think the first question has to be, is Yuki Nagasato now your favorite soccer player? And if she isn't, why isn't she?
All the players have been so great. Yuki is one of my favorites. She is a joy to cover. I will say that. I'm not sure how long she's been doing it, but she runs a YouTube channel and has run it for quite a while. She has released a couple of very entertaining vlogs based on racing's traveling woes, which have been kind of unfortunate. If you think a trip from Louisville to Raleigh, North Carolina wouldn't be terrible, but evidently they had a little bit of trouble getting to Raleigh. It's Louisville to Charlotte to Raleigh, but, a little bit of trouble getting there. They had an absolute disastrous trip to Portland, kind of both getting there and on the field. But the team got stuck in Houston, and some of them even had to fly through California. And it was funny that the coaching staff left after the players but arrived before the players in Portland, so because they had to spend the night in Houston. But Yuki was documenting kind of the travel, the pains on her vlog, which is, great to cover. Her vlog is just full of entertaining, I guess Yuki-isms and other things like that. Evidently, a big thing going around Twitter, and I don't know as much about this as I should probably, but she evidently didn't know what that ass meant.
There's been, obviously, Twitter can be a great place and a bad place. There have been few better days on soccer Twitter than Yuki Nagasato dat ass day. That was just a joy from start to finish.
So yeah, that's been great. You can buy that shirt in the team store. I'm sure you can buy it online. I think specifically for one of the Pride fundraisers that the team is doing, she donated, basically somebody made a flag of that Twitter post. And basically you could bid on that flag to, and that raised, as kind of a donation for Pride Month, somebody purchased that. It was at the match on Sunday, I believe. So, so yeah, it's always always entertaining. It, you know, my favorite Yuki thing so far has been, and I wrote about this in one of my columns, is that she's teaching her teammates, you know, the appropriate Japanese swear words.
Of course.
Which is great, because they showed up in one of her vlogs. I had to Google it, and I, you know, Googled it and said, oh, that's what that means. So I was delighted with that. That's always the first thing you should learn in any foreign language is how to swear. So so that was great. But Yuki's been great off the field. She's been great on the field too. She hasn't scored yet. I expect that that's coming. One of the things I'll say about Yuki on the field is her work rate and her defensive intensity has been a pleasant surprise. She works so hard on both sides of the field. I think kind of knowing her role on this team and kind of, you know, racing, being an expansion side, she knows she's going to have to dig in and do a lot of the kind of dirty work on the defensive side, and has shown no hesitancy in doing that. So that's been a fantastic, fantastic kind of surprise, you know, from somebody that's known as an attacker to kind of dig in and do the dirty work, you know, defensively. So she's been great, both great on and off the field.
Yeah, she's certainly a very selfless player. And I know I was laughing a minute ago. It's come up today, you know, that the struggles that NWSL teams have at travel. For those who do not know, they still do fly commercial, and it's been a bit chaotic this year. So that, I think, you know, as the NWSL talks about their first CBA negotiation between the players and the league, I think they're going to definitely be looking for at least something MLS style with a little more structure on the travel. So yeah, hopefully that is resolved soon. You mentioned, you know, Yuki obviously on and off the field. I'm particularly interested in off the field because we saw her in Chicago become a fan favorite almost immediately. And the same seems to have happened in Louisville. You know, how important do you think she is already to this team, particularly off the field, in how quickly it seems like the fan base has embraced this team?
Yeah, well, it's been a little bit of a challenge just because we were coming out of COVID restrictions. So everything that racing has done up until maybe the last month or so has been virtual. But since she has such a great online presence, I think she's greatly helped with that. She was definitely, I think, of the players that were, you know, that we kind of signed originally and maybe that were kind of on the roster, probably the most well-known and probably the most visible on social media. So before they took the field, I think everybody knew Yuki. And so I think she was really beneficial on putting a face to the club before they took the field, just because, you know, there had been plans to do, you know, a, you know, in-person session with Coach Holly that got canceled. I'm not sure if there was ever a plan to do much from a player meet and greet, but obviously that was not going to happen in the COVID restrictions. Our supporters groups down here, I'll call out specifically Lavender Legion, I think has been really good in engaging with her specifically. I think she's been really good as that face in COVID. And as we've started to come out of COVID, that's come up as well, but it's given us the chance to kind of get to know some other players as well. But I think she was instrumental in being that kind of face of the team up front. Especially before we signed, you know, many other players. I believe Yuki and Savannah might have been the first two official racing players due to the deal that was worked out. But yeah, it was great to have two faces early on to kind of get to have you know, the fans start to rally around.
Definitely want to talk about Savannah McCaskill more in a minute, because I think it's interesting the way she's been used in Louisville so far versus the way she was typically used by the Red Stars. But first, you mentioned that, you know, Racing Louisville is the first top tier professional sports team in the city in a very long time. Obviously, Louisville City, the men's USL championship side, who built Lynn Family Stadium, they precede Racing by quite a bit and have had a very good history as a second tier side. But, you know, when you take the combination of being a top tier professional sport and particularly women's soccer, you know, people have obviously preconceptions about the South and sports. And, you know, there were questions of if Atlanta United would succeed because it was in Atlanta, and those myths were dispelled quickly. Nashville SC has added to this myth that soccer wouldn't work in the South. So obviously Racing Louisville's different in a lot of ways for the city, you know, beyond just maybe the players, why do you think it's been so well received? You know, what were the ingredients, I guess, that have set up Racing Louisville for such kind of immediate success? It's been amazing seeing the atmosphere at these home games.
Yeah, so I think Louisville City has a lot of credit for that. And I don't know if the listeners know, you may know this, but the listeners may not, is that the same ownership group, Soccer Holdings LLC, owns both Louisville City and Racing Louisville FC. So having the same ownership group helps. You know, the stadium is fantastic. I hope you get a chance to come down and see it at some point. I mean, it is an amazing stadium. It's, you know, close to 15,000-16,000 capacity. It's unique in that it's 12,000 standings, but it's 12,000 seats, but it actually has stands at both ends. You know, traditional, you think, you know, English football stands, it has stands at both ends. So that is fantastic. The stands are usually pretty full. I wouldn't say they've been 100% full quite yet, but it is a unique stadium. The location's fantastic. But Louisville is, I mean, it's kind of a self-proclaimed soccer city, but I mean, it really is. People have been absolutely crazy about it. They for years, for a good, probably, I guess, since they've been in existence, have drawn consistently, you know, 7,000 and 8,000 and 9,000, and frankly, an ill-suited baseball field to play. And, you know, the games there were sometimes a challenge to watch. The sight lines weren't great. You couldn't see one of the corners because of how the stadium was constructed. But those the fans filled up that stadium as well. So it's been, you know, I think just there's a couple of things like the lack of kind of professional competition. The only other real kind of professional sports competition in town is the Louisville Bats, the Reds AAA Farm Club. Past that, you probably have a couple of really, really minor things that kind of come and go. But from a professional sports perspective, that's about it. So the city has really embraced it. And the city does have a really good soccer culture. I'm probably a little bit biased just because I play a lot of soccer, kind of pick up. I'm around soccer people, but the city seems to talk about soccer a lot more than they did, you know, 20 years ago.
Well, that's really awesome to see, you know, as soccer continues to find these new markets. It's like the discovery a few years ago that Cincinnati was a giant soccer city, which right. Everyone in Ohio could have told you. And, you know, you could have looked at participation rates in youth sports in Central and Southwest Ohio, and you could have seen that coming. But that I think a lot of people outside of Ohio didn't realize they had a sleeping giant there. And Louisville is proving to be kind of a similar case. You alluded to this trade earlier, but of course it was probably the headline of the offseason for Racing Louisville outside of the expansion draft, of course, was that the Red Stars traded Yuki Nagasato and Savannah McCaskill to Louisville in exchange for protection from the expansion draft process. We've already got a pretty good sample size for Savannah McCaskill in Louisville. She has played every minute of the five games this season, starting as a number 10 in behind whoever is playing as the central striker. In Chicago, she often very much felt like a square peg in a round hole. She came into a team that had Sam Kerr starting at striker. Yuki would play on the left. Vanessa DiBernardo is very entrenched as the number 10 in that Red Stars team. So she often found herself either out on the right wing or coming off the bench and never really seemed to get a good run of minutes in a position that suited her. And there were glimpses of it last year during the Challenge Cup where we saw her play as a 9 or a 10. She hasn't scored yet, only one assist. But what have you made of her performance so far as clearly someone that Christy Holly wants to build this team around and has a lot of faith in?
So if you take away Michelle Batos, who has been absolutely fantastic, I would hate to see the goal difference without her. Some of the games she's just been absolutely peppered with shots. But if you take Batos out of it, McCaskill's probably been the player of the season so far. Louisville is still trying to figure out its midfield. Its midfield has frankly not been great. Prior to the game against Houston, I specifically wrote about this this week. I thought the midfield was fantastic against Houston. But what they've started to do is kind of shift around people's responsibilities in the midfield. So I would say, and again, I'm not a strict soccer analyst, and I try my best to kind of, you know, figure out what's going on the field. But to my eyes, McCaskill has most often taken up what I kind of call that, depending on your numbering system, kind of that number four or that number eight midfield position. So either sitting in front of the back four in at number four, or maybe as that number eight and kind of a box to box midfielder. I imagine she occasionally lines up on the left side, but almost always in that kind of, you know, you think box to box midfielder role. She has played kind of as the most forward of the midfielders a few times, but Lauren Millay was more in that role on Sunday. So it's interesting to see they've kind of been interchanging their midfielders quite a bit. But, you know, I did say that the midfield has struggled. That is not a reflection on Savannah at all, because she has been fantastic and her work rate is fantastic. And I don't know if there's anybody else on the team that cares as passionately as she does during the game, especially because she's probably the most vocal person on the field during the games. So I don't think she's going to get much chance to start up front. I think Louisville has plenty of attacking forward talent, kind of quote forward talent. But she has been great in the midfield. I think that's where she probably is best suited from Coach Holly's system. But she's been great so far, and I expect that to continue. I wouldn't be completely surprised for her to get a rest either in the game against North Carolina on Wednesday or potentially against Chicago, although Chicago would be a shame, obviously. Mm-hmm. But maybe not, because the Louisville only really has nominally four midfielders on the team. So who else are you going to play? The other option there might have been CeCe Kaiser, but she got a nasty kind of.
Yeah, I saw that picture. That did not look fun.
Yeah. So that would have been the other, you know, person maybe to drop into the midfield, because I think she might naturally fit into that role. But I think Savannah may continue to log them, and it's just out of necessity.
Yeah, that is good to see that she's finding a more permanent role, and it's interesting that she's playing a little deeper than she's traditionally played. And, you know, I think from a Chicago perspective, I think everyone just wants to see her succeed. You know, when she came out of college from South Carolina, her record kind of spoke for itself. The talent was there. The work rate that you mentioned was always very evident. It just never seemed like she quite found her place in Chicago. And I think it'd be really awesome to see her kind of carve out a role for herself, and especially a role of such importance on a team and getting those kind of minutes. So that's definitely going to be something to look forward to on Saturday, I hope. To your point, it would really be a shame if Savannah and Yuki were not starting that game on Saturday in Chicago. It wouldn't feel right if they were not both on the field from the get-go in that one. You mentioned there are games to come. We are recording on Tuesday before the Red Stars play OL Reign and before Louisville play North Carolina, which means we are still just a couple of days removed from Ebony Salmon announcing herself with what was one of the cleanest turns I've ever seen on a soccer ball to set up her first NWSL goal. She came from a club in Bristol City that got relegated from the FA Women's Super League in England. And there was debate when she was signed about, is this a good acquisition? Is it not? Is her kind of lack of goal scoring a reflection on her, or the fact that her team was really bad? But man, it feels like a goal like that is kind of the perfect way to dispel all that doubt really quickly.
If you looked at Bristol City's possession numbers in some of the games, I mean, it was really, really lopsided. And the fact that she scored at all, which she did, she scored several times for Bristol City.
Yeah, six goals, I believe, across the season, like 20 games, 15 starts, which, you know, is not terrible, right. But it, again, kind of reflects the team she was playing in.
Right. But it kind of fits right into how Racing is having to play at the moment. Is there are going to be matches, especially on the road, where they're not going to see a whole lot of the ball. Louisville's road possession percentages, I think, have been 40-41% in that range. So you're going to need somebody that's going to be able to kind of act as that lone striker up front, and to be able to kind of almost play with your back to the goal, either to hold up play or to kind of be able to make a turn and an attack. She provides that really well. I can't remember if it was the writers or who exactly voted her Young Player of the Year in England, but that is definitely transitioned over here. I think she's going to be fantastic for this team. She looks kind of like a, at least to my eyes, a pure number nine, even though I don't think she necessarily played in that number nine role for Bristol all the time. But on this team, I think she'll play there. When Nadia Nadim shows up, it'll be interesting to see if they kind of play one behind the other, if they kind of float in and out, if they're on the field at the same time. But I would think that if her name is on in the starting 11, she's going to be in that number nine role.
So you mentioned Nadia Nadim there as well. I think it's been really interesting to watch as Racing has thrown around some money, especially from an expansion team. If I remember correctly, they got a little bit of allocation money via some trades around the draft, but they have, you know, gone out and said, you know, we don't want to be the expansion team that gets just run over by people. And they had a couple of tough results back to back earlier in the season, but it really feels like, you know, you mentioned it's the same ownership group as Louisville City. It really feels like they want this team to get up to speed quickly. And they're not just here to just be the expansion team that, you know, sits at the bottom of the table and lets everyone beat up on them. What have you made of how quickly there's been investment pumped into this roster?
It's a savvy front office. I meant to mention earlier, one thing that you probably know but didn't mention as part of that Chicago trade is that Chicago traded one of their international spots to Louisville, which allowed Louisville to sign however you want to look at it, either Salmon or Nadim. So thanks again to Chicago for that, because it gave Racing Louisville that extra international spot. So the front office is really smart. And so this is not unique to Louisville, but it gets tossed around a lot here. It's like, you know, Louisville loves a winner. And I think more, maybe even more than that, is that people worry about Louisville's tolerance to support a team that loses a lot. I think that the support will be there for Racing. It'll be a tough year. It'll be there for Racing. But, you know, people will have short memories. And that short memory of when, you know, Louisville City joined the USL was conference finals, you know, every year. Basically since they've been in existence. So, you know, Louisville City was successful right away. A lot of that was due to the ownership group. It's tougher to come into the NWSL and be successful right away. But I think that's the goal, is to, you know, they are an expansion side. That doesn't mean they have to play like an expansion side. I think they've got a great coach in Coach Holly. I think they made a really good hire there. And you cannot fault any of the effort so far. But I really think that the infrastructure is there to be successful long-term. I mean, it's probably not going to translate onto the field. You know, a great achievement this year would be to get to six and sneak into the playoffs. That may be a bit much, but, you know, maybe not. They sit seventh now. They're tied on punch with the points with the game in hand, you know, as we talk here on Tuesday. So it's not impossible. You know, the one maybe kind of, you know, ace in the hole there is, I don't think they're going to lose a whole lot of people for the Olympics. So if they can sneak in a couple of maybe surprise wins during the Olympics, maybe they can pick up a few points there and sneak into that last playoff position. But long term, they're definitely set up for success. The attendance numbers have been great. Brad Estes, the club president, stated, combined with Louisville City FC, but the merchandise sales are already 25% over projections for this year.
I mean, how could you not love this kit? If you know, you're listening to this as a podcast, I am wearing the flower covered Racing Louisville home kit right now as we record, because how could I not for this episode? But I mean, yeah, why would you not buy this kit?
yeah, and it's been amazing. Just the amount of quality merchandise, and the communications team for Racing and Louisville, they share a communications team, but they are really aggressive in a good way. I mean, I think if you spend a dime in their team store, they're calling you up asking you if you want to buy tickets. I've had a couple of people tell me that. So they're looking for every opportunity to fill the stadium. So, I mean, I think it will be successful long-term. They had, you know, I think it was right at 6,000, maybe 5,900 for Father's Day, which some people said it might be down for Father's Day. A Sunday is a different day than Saturday, but I think the attendance numbers will be there. It'll continue to grow. I think it's got a nice solid, dedicated fan base so far. So, you know, long term, I think it's going to be a franchise that sticks around in Louisville for hopefully forever. But, you know, but we'll see. We know that the NWSL has teams that move around quite a bit here and there. But I think Louisville's going to be in good shape because of their ownership group and because of the support that the city has shown so far.
They do seem to have all the necessary ingredients for success. Michael, I will get you out of here on this. You mentioned Savannah McCaskill playing a bit deeper is one particular wrinkle that, you know, you've seen from this Louisville side this season. For a Chicago audience, when they're either in person or maybe at home watching this game on Saturday, is there anything in particular you would tell them to look out for that's really particularly interesting to watch with this Louisville team and the way that Christy Holly has them setting up so far?
Well, I would say, you know, obviously number one overall draft pick, Emily Fox. I'll be absolutely floored if one day she's not starting at left back for the women's national team. She's that good. She's so good that in my player ratings, post after the games, I just kind of stick in like 7 or 8 without even thinking, which is kind of unfortunate for her because, I mean, she's had some fantastic games. She probably had a really, really fantastic game this past one. I just didn't notice because she's always fantastic. I kind of noticed some of the other players that had to kind of step their game up. So what I think you will see, and if Chicago has done their scouting report, is they will try, if they can, maybe to attack down the left side of Louisville's defense. That'll be interesting because the player we haven't talked about, Jemma Bonner, traditionally lines up on the left side of at center back. So it kind of leaves you maybe some not inexperienced players, but maybe just a little bit less talent on the right hand defending side for Louisville. Although Jemma did line up on the right hand side last game. So that'll be interesting to watch. So watch how Chicago attacks, see if they favor one side to attack because Emily Fox is so good both on and off the ball. I'm betting that that Salmon starts for against Chicago, so definitely watch her. Just trying to think if there's anybody else particularly to call attention to. The midfield, like I said, has been a struggle, so I'll be continuing to watch them. They had a fantastic game, but it'll be their third game in 7 days if we don't change up the midfield. So it'd be interesting to see if there may be some issues in the midfield. We might get to see some players we haven't seen before. But, I would say Fox and Salmon. And then if Michelle Batos it doesn't make 4 or 5 fantastic saves, then, I hope she doesn't have to make as many, but she has in just about every game. She's just a fantastic goalkeeper. It is just and as a team captain and as a person as well, she's been such a great ambassador for the team. Just a quick story about her. So she was great as usual again on Sunday was Father's Day. She lost her father a couple of years ago, so Father's Day is always a tough day for her. But as the team was walking off the field and walking up through the section of the stadium where they go back to their locker room, she stopped for a good 5 minutes and signed autographs and, took selfies. Just a selfless person and captain, gives it all on the field. So, pay special attention to her because, she's made probably at least one fantastic save each match. So if you're unfamiliar with Michelle, she's one of the best goalkeepers in the league. So definitely watch for her as well.
For sure. And you mentioned, your point about how the Red Stars might attack is an interesting one, because what we've seen a lot this season is that you'll see Mallory Pugh out on the left and Kaylia Watt floating to the left as well, and generally attacking down a team's defensive right. And the result has been that Rachel Hill, who has been tending to play on the right side, ends up with a lot of space to herself because teams are so focused on Watt and Pugh. For Louisville, though, that'll be interesting, considering, to your point, that the left side of Louisville's defense is the stronger side. That matchup will be interesting because, do the Red Stars isolate, 1v1 against Emily Fox? Is that a battle they want? Or will they just kind of hammer away down the other side, hoping that Pugh or Watt can make the breakthrough? So definitely something that will be interesting to watch on Saturday night. Michael Shaw of Fleur-de-Lis FC, thanks so much for taking the time. Michael, where can people find your work and your coverage?
Well, hopefully they can find my website, floridaleefc.com. All that's hyphenated. But your best bet is to follow me on Twitter at floridaleefc on Twitter. I link all my blog posts and articles on Twitter. I think the handle is floridaleefc1, but if you find, you know, just Google or just search for floridaleefc, you should find me. Trying to get a presence on Instagram and Facebook, but that's a little bit slow going. But Twitter's been my engine so far, so look for me on Twitter.
Sounds good. Wherever you are listening to this podcast, there will be links to both the website and the Twitter account in the description of this episode. Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show, and best of luck to Louisville this season. I know Chicago fans won't be wishing so much this weekend, but looking forward to what should be a fun game, particularly with all the ties between the two teams.
All right, cool. And let me put in one last plug. If your listeners aren't aware that Chicago Red Stars are also participating in the Women's Cup in August.
Yes.
Maybe if you'll mention that, that's going to be a fantastic event with PSG and Bayern Munich. So, you know, take the short drive down from Chicago and come see, you know, some great soccer matches with some great international clubs.
Definitely a big away day opportunity. So maybe we'll have to talk again around when that comes up, because I'm sure there will be no shortage of storylines from that weekend. Thanks so much, Michael. And yeah, good luck with the project. Excited to always see more coverage of women's soccer.
Great. Thanks.
Welcome back to SoccerCast Chicago, where I'm now joined by Chicago Red Stars defender Zoe Morse, who is doing some really cool work off the field. Zoe, welcome to the show and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Of course. So before we get into the main reason you are here today, you also host a podcast, My Kind of Podcast, the official Red Stars podcast, along with Connor Moore and your teammate, Sarah Lubert. I'm curious how you and Sarah got involved. Was it one of your ideas? Did the team ask you? How did the group for the podcast come together?
So I think how it started was Connor was new to the Red Stars, and Sarah and I were two of the first players that he worked with on stories, and he happened to have the idea for the podcast around that same time, and we all just kind of hit it off and thought it'd be a really fun idea. So Connor's definitely the mastermind behind it, and Sarah and I are kind of just along for the ride with him to have fun and get to meet all the awesome guests and, yeah, create some content.
Yeah, be sure to check that out. There's been some really good interviews already with Red Stars players. I saw the one recently with Aaron Wright, who, you know, recently came back to the team after being on maternity leave, and then COVID kind of extended that. And so that was cool to talk to her. But yeah, be sure to go check out My Kind of Podcast. It shows up on all the Red Stars social media feeds. So with that, it's always interesting for me to talk to people about things they're really passionate about. And I noticed a while ago, following, you know, all the various Red Stars players on social media, you see when things come up. And I noticed that conservation and protecting the environment are things that you are really passionate about. So first of all, where did that interest start? Like for you, why did environmentalism become such a personal interest?
I think it's definitely been a journey starting from when I was young. So I grew up in Michigan, and Michigan's a very nature oriented state, I guess you could say, surrounded by the Great Lakes. Like on the weekends, I would always be going to friends' cottages up north or visiting family up north, things like that. So I was constantly surrounded by nature. So I think I developed that appreciation pretty early on. But I was also, my dad's a doctor, so I always kind of was surrounded by the medical field. And I always kind of thought I would end up going into medicine because I was very interested in human health and that whole world. But as I kind of went on that journey, got to college, started taking some classes, I became increasingly interested in how the natural world's related to our health and how what we do to the environment comes back to us and how what we do to the environment wrecks the environment. So that whole kind of intersection right there is how I really got into it. And I just started reading more, watching more, learning more. And so I guess that interest really blossomed in college. And just as I've continued that journey, realizing just how intricately connected we are to the environment. Like everything we do affects everything around us, and we're all connected. And yeah, it just continues to expand my mind for sure.
And I've seen one of the groups you work with particularly is Water Boys, who I became aware of a few years ago. They were started, for those who don't know, by former NFL defensive lineman Chris Long. For those who don't know about Water Boys, can you kind of give a quick synopsis of what the group's mission is?
Yeah, so our mission is to get clean water access to as many people as we possibly can. And I think right now the goal is 1 million and we're working our way there. But so it started, Chris Long took a trip to Mount Kilimanjaro, I believe. And that really spurred his passion to help people in this area. And it began helping communities in East Africa, communities that were already working on the ground to build these kind of wells. And he really just wanted to help support those efforts. And then now he's kind of expanding into, I'm an ambassador for the Hometown H2O project. So they're projects based in the US and we try to help families that don't have access to the main water lines and maybe have been relying on rainwater, things like that, who are in need of water access essentially, because water access impacts so many areas of our life. Like you can't do so many things if you don't have this basic need. So that's kind of the motivation behind it. And we just want to try and get clean water access to as many people as possible.
Yeah, definitely wanted to ask you about Hometown H2O, because I knew that Chris started the project as more of an international thing, traveling to countries that really didn't have any sort of infrastructure existing. But I think it's often easy to forget. I mean, you posted a tweet recently with the stats that, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of households, millions of Americans who don't have clean water access, especially in a city like Chicago. I mean, I'm someone who, you know, taken for granted growing up around the Great Lakes, growing up in places where there was always easy access to fresh water. But then as time goes on, you learn about stories like Flint, Michigan, which, you know, or even certain neighborhoods here in Chicago who the water isn't necessarily healthy. So I think it's really easy to forget, at least I know in my life, that a lot of people you would assume have clean access don't. So, you know, is there any, you know, you mentioned the original goal of Water Boys was bringing access to 1 million people. With Hometown H2O, is, you know, what specific impacts are you personally hoping to have? And is the organization hoping to have as they look to work on a really local level?
Yeah, I think it's continuing to realize that on our home front, we have a lot of things to work on. And in our own communities, we can't overlook these situations, and we can help people all around the world, and that's absolutely incredible. But there's problems in our backyards that we share with our neighbors that we need to help with first and foremost, in my mind. And I don't know the specific numbers that Hometown H2O is striving for, but it's really just seeing the impact that you can have on an individual family. Because a lot of these wells that we're doing in the US are for pretty much like one family that might have a lot of members. Like there might be multiple generations living there, maybe some people with disabilities, things like that. So seeing the impact you can have on those people's lives and just seeing their reaction to when they do get the clean water is really my personal reason why I do it, because it's so pervasive once these people, like the impact of it is so pervasive once people have access. So that's why I do it. And I don't know the numbers, like I said, but helping one family is enough for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it feels like that's the way you have to approach a problem like this, right? Because the scale of it globally, or even just nationally in the US, feels so insurmountable. Yeah, is that just kind of the idea that you got to go kind of door to door almost? Like one, you talked about if you have the impact on one family at a time, that has a tremendous impact. Because if people are looking to, you know, if they hear about the work you're doing and they're looking to make an impact as well, yeah, how do you, you know, when you think about how big the problem is, how do you, I guess, stay focused on, you know, just kind of chipping away at it? And how would you encourage others to feel like they can have an impact, even though the problem feels so large?
Yeah, that's definitely something I've wrestled with, just with like the climate crisis in general. And then as you bring it down into smaller issues like clean water access, people talk about climate anxiety and things like that, and how you can get so wrapped up into these issues that you end up stagnant. And I like to think of like small steps are going to lead to the biggest impact. And that's how I live my life in general. That's how I train for soccer. That's how I like build my friendships. Like the smallest acts are going to add up. and we can't sit around trying to plan this, like the one, like the silver bullet or whatever that's going to fix everything. That's, you're going to end up leaving people without the help that they need. So I think making those small steps is what will ultimately lead to the end. And so anyone who's trying to make an impact in any space, it's just getting started. Like there's that Anne Frank quote, I'm gonna mess it up, but it's like, nobody needs to wait before they start to change the world kind of thing. And like, I'm not trying to change the world. Like that's not what I'm saying, but you can start today. Like you can do that one thing today that will make an impact on someone's life.
I think that's really good life advice in general. That's not just for you know, the work you're doing, but clearly can translate well. So you mentioned that this is something you really became passionate about in college, that you initially were really interested in human health. Obviously, right now as a professional soccer player, there is only so much of your time that you can dedicate to this. Is you know, what you hope to do someday once your playing career is over, is that something you think about now already? Or are you just kind of focused on the work you're doing in the moment?
I would say it's a little bit of both. I'm definitely, all my energy is like, I'm very focused on my soccer career and trying to do the best I can at that. But at the same time, I'm someone who, in order to be my best on the soccer field too, I need to be doing something else as well. So it's kind of, it works well in this situation where like, I want to be doing good things in the environmental space and the human space. So I kind of complement my soccer life with things like projects like this, with working with Hometown H2O, with trying to figure out ways to make the Red Stars more sustainable, more environmentally friendly, things like that, working with other organizations in Chicago. So I definitely am trying to weld those two things together in my life right now. And after soccer, I definitely want to do something where human and environmental interaction combine. With, I don't know if that's going to be more research route or maybe law school or even medical school. I don't really know, but any of those paths I would take would definitely have an environmental perspective with them, because I think you can't separate the environmental perspective from any of those.
Absolutely. So you mentioned trying to make the Red Stars a more sustainable organization. What does that look like? You know, when, you know, it's, you know, that's going to be something that not a lot of people see, obviously. So when you mentioned that, what does that look like? What are some ideas you've had? What are some initiatives you've tried to put in place, just suggestions to try to make it a more, as you put it, sustainable organization from an environmental perspective?
Yeah. So I'm a young player, so I'm not super high up in the organization or anything like that. So I've been trying to focus on things that I have like the voice to do. So I'm also a big advocate for, you can't put a message out to the world and be an advocate of something if you're not doing it yourself. So just finding things within our own day-to-day actions as a team, like looking at what laundry detergent are we using? Are we using plastic cups that we immediately throw away? Are we using the wax lined Gatorade cups? Are we using reusable water bottles? Are we like taking shorter showers? Are we doing anything like that? And then, so anything within the team's like day-to-day actions, I've been looking at that and like just starting conversations with teammates even. Like when we were in the Challenge Cup last year in Utah, so we were in a hotel for a month, so we had a lot of conversations with teammates, but I have this like reusable silverware set that I would bring because it was all like plastic utensils, and the amount of teammates that were like, hey, what's that? Why do you bring that? That kind of like just starting these conversations and people hopping on board and like trying new things themselves has been exciting to see. Something else I've done a couple of times is I'll like invite teammates over for a meatless Monday meal or something like that. So we kind of like rally around having fun cooking together while also making a meal that doesn't have meat, because we know that that does greatly impact the environment. So beyond those kind of daily actions, we're also trying to plan like a Go Green themed game, things like that, to get more at the higher level. So we're kind of working our way up there.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to what you mentioned before about just kind of taking those small steps. You don't have to necessarily be doing big things to have a bigger impact. I really appreciate all the time you've taken this morning, but I do want to finish on one soccer question. So as you know, and as everybody listening will know by the time this comes out, the USWNT Olympic roster was announced this week, and the Red Stars are, of course, sending Julie Ertz, Tierna Davidson, and Casey Krueger all to Tokyo. That's a lot of defenders. Yes. Obviously, Julie's been missing already for a while, but there's a lot of young defenders on this team, including yourself, who are likely to get more opportunities and more playing time over the next couple of months. Is that something you're looking forward to? And how do you try to stay prepared, especially mentally, for whenever the opportunities come?
Yeah. First of all, I'm so excited for all my teammates to be going to the Olympics. Like, that is such a huge accomplishment, and we're going to miss them here, but also we'll be excited to watch them in those games. But for me, my mentality is that I'm always going to be ready whenever I'm called upon, whether that's now that they're gone or whatever happens. I try my best to stay as game fit mentally and physically as I possibly can, and just show up every day at practice like I will be playing in those games, and continue to get better each week, because that's all I can do.
Yeah. Sounds great. So before I let you go then, as far as the work you've done, if people want to learn more about Water Boys, Hometown H2O, the stuff you're doing as an ambassador, where can they go find more information?
Yeah, so I think it's waterboys.org, I think, is the website. They have tons of information on there, all the other athletes that are involved in it, tons of NFL players, NBA players, WNBA, other NWSL. There's a lot of players in there. So yeah, there's a lot of info there that you could learn about.
That sounds great. And if I remember, I will put links to the Water Boys website and anything else that seems obvious in the description of this podcast, wherever you are listening to this. Zoe Morse, thanks for coming on the show today to share the work you're doing off the field, and best of luck this weekend against Louisville.
Thank you so much.